We always like to talk about, first up, about where the oi is at, the grey-faced petrel, which is kind of the indicator species for the project and for the maunga. It must be a while since I talked to you, because I think last time we talked about the chicks heading out to sea, but they must be well gone by now, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. So they fledged in December.
Yeah. Oh, okay, they fledged in December.
They fledged in December. And then we get a little break, and then they come back in April, the adults, not the chicks.
Not the chicks.
Yeah, so the adults come back, and it's actually really cool, because we usually go and do a bit of a check around, you know, early March before they come in.
Yeah.
And everything just looks overgrown and like nothing's been there. Like you see a few holes in the ground.
Around, this is where their nests are, or their burrows.
Yeah, should give some context, shouldn't I?
We go
and see them, you know, the sites.
Yeah.
And overgrown, and gosh, with this summer that we've had with all the rain and the warmth, so much growth, and especially of weeds as well.
Yeah.
And then you come back a month later, which was just on the new moon. They start coming in April.
Yeah.
And last week I was out, and burrows have been getting excavated. There's guano outside the burrows. There's feathers. Like, you can see that they've been scratching around and having a party out there.
So they're doing their housekeeping.
Yeah, everything opens up. And it's quite amazing what these little birds do. And the great thing is because of the camera work, the species camera stuff that we've done, where we have cameras on active burrows for like 24/7, and check the footage to see like if there's predators coming in or what's happening at the burrow. We know that basically, it's like a party outside the burrow. So birds land and mates come in, but also younger birds come in. And sometimes you could have five birds at burrows, running around and flapping their wings and calling and that. So it's pretty cool because we've had the visuals, so we can imagine what's going on out there at night, even if we don't have cameras out.
Do they help each other out with cleaning the burrows out? Or do they just go and see each other, come and say hello?
Yeah, I think it's more competition as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and some birds will land and go again, and others will stay and mate. But they wait for their mates to come in, and then obviously mate, breed.
Yeah.
And then they leave again and come back.
How long before eggs are laid then?
Not till July.
It's May. Okay.
Yeah.
2 months. That's a long period of gestation.
Gestation, yeah. So that's what they do. So some birds only come back in a little bit later, like this new moon and then the next one.
And how many eggs do they lay?
One,
okay.
Yeah, and that's it. It's like everything, all the energy goes into that egg, but if there's not enough food at sea, if there's predators around the burrow, they'll just, if the other mate doesn't return, like one parent can't feed the chick, so they'll just abandon.
It's also very hard to produce a chick if there's only one parent.
Well, no, but if they've mated and laid an egg, then, you know, if a parent doesn't come back. So actually, you know, something interesting that we didn't talk about is there's a submission to open to protect seabirds at sea from less than ideal fishing practices.
So this is a government submission process?
Yep.
What's it called?
I can't think off the top of my head. But if you go to the Forest and Bird website, they've got an automatic submission button there.
Okay.
But anyway, the government and DOC and that are working with MPI to improve fishing practices so that seabirds aren't affected as much, like by the long lines and the hooks and everything. So we lose a lot of birds at sea.
Yeah.
Everyone would have seen the pictures of fishing vessels with all the birds behind them.
Yeah.
You know, scavenging. You know, getting into the food. But it also means a lot of them are killed. And so there's actually submissions on that. So what we find is we sometimes get a bird come back to the burrow, but the other parent doesn't arrive back.
Yeah.
And is lost at sea.
Yeah, well, that would happen in the normal course of events anyway as they got older, wouldn't it?
But they are long-lived. They can go up to 30 years. So,
okay.
Yeah, so it's, yes, it does happen, but they're also, you know, they're really resilient birds as well. But there's all kinds of reasons why birds perish. And predators on land are the, you know, number one challenge for us here.
Yeah, yeah.
But at sea, there's also challenges. So, yeah.
Okay. Have you got like a link about that on Facebook or something like that?
Yeah, we were just going to post that, so it should be on our Facebook page.
Yeah, we'll try and share that so people can have a look at that.
Yeah, I think it's good to be aware. And, I mean, seabirds are the most threatened birds in the world.
And that's pretty much all we've got in this country, apart from a few parrots.
Yeah. Yeah, so and in New Zealand, we're the seabird capital of the world. We have a third of the world's seabirds here in New Zealand. So I think it's really important for us to know how valuable they are and also the massive impact they have on kind of just ecosystem processes.
Mm.
So, we don't want to lose them, and it's good to do everything we can to protect them.
So how many – we know there's other communities trying to create sort of sanctuary situations for birds – around the country, but how many are actually in a coastal situation like we are?
Mm. Well, there are other seabird projects and coastal projects, obviously. But I think Karioi is unique in that it has that transition from montane forest right down to the coastline and that uninterrupted vegetation.
Right.
So that makes it really unique, and that there's not a huge city or community living right on that coastline, so that we've got a lot of coastline that's still very uninhabited,
and that's going to stay that way, isn't it? Didn't someone donate a farm, some farmland out there to
the Jacksons,
as a reserve? Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So yeah, we'll always have that connection.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it's a pretty extreme environment out there. You know, we drive around the coast to rural.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's pretty wild.
Yeah. So and a lot of landowners are replanting a lot of that land as well. And looking after it really well, so we'll get hopefully more forested coastal areas.
Yeah,
and landowners are definitely doing their bit, so it's really nice to see.
I think there's a recognition that there are some parts of farms that aren't worth working on these days, like trying to make money out of by running stock on, and it's better off putting them back to native bush.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And all the science being done on that, like if you're just farming eroded, steep land, you know, if you retire that land, you can make just as much money off the more productive parts of the farm.
Yeah.
Rather than investing and putting fertilizer and losing animals on steep, eroded land, animals end up in ditches and, that's another conversation.
Yes, yeah. So anyway, but they're always doing well. They're busy. They're having some chicks.
Well, they're coming in, so that's good. And we did have our most successful year last year, so we got at least 12 chicks away, which is the most we've known about.
I know, there's always it's tough, folks, because the chicks get born and they're all cute and everyone's happy, and then there's inevitably some carnage at some point.
Yeah.
With the stoat or something getting in, but yeah, and are you having to improve the traps? Do they get to know their way around traps? I saw a video online of a mouse using a stick to set off a mouse trap the other day.
Really?
Yeah.
Most of the mice I trap in my garage don't use a stick.
They don't know how to know. No, obviously. Those ones don't get caught. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know whether it was like someone trained it up just to make a video, because that sort of thing can happen online.
Yeah. But you are right. Completely right. Animals do get around the traps.
Yeah.
We've done lots of video work, like on new traps that have been promoted to us, and like this is the next best thing. And then we'll literally see possums jumping on the traps and playing around them and crapping all over them, but never going in them.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, you know, you'll have a predator party around your trap and some will go in. And some won't. And then you'll also get things like feral cats harvesting rats out of traps. So you'll catch something and then something other animal will come and harvest it.
If you could just train the cats to reset the trap afterwards, it would be a win-win situation.
Yeah. Well, we've got a really cool new self-setting trap that we got from Doc, and it's called AT220.
Yeah.
And it's self-setting, but it's like a Doc 200, but on the tree, so it's a really strong trap, and instead of the animal having to pull at any food or grab anything, when it sticks its head in to get the lure, it triggers the trap to go off. So it's this massive, you know, set trap, boom.
Yeah.
But it's got now like a little automated thing that then resets the trap.
It's not for the squeamish, is it, this business?
Yeah, so that's a pretty cool new trap. And so literally you can find piles of rats or possums underneath the trap.
And that doesn't, but they don't click at some point that there's like a cemetery beneath this food supply?
No, it just about attracts them.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, that trap is the bee's knees, and we're still like looking at it, analysing how it's working and using it on some of our farm edges.
Yeah.
Bush and farm kind of interface. And but at my place, I've got one set up, and I caught a couple of rats in one night and then a few more the next night. But there's a possum on my roof and in the tree just down from my place, and I cannot get that possum into that trap. So even even we have trouble with things like that. So and it's all set up for possums, to catch possums, but I'm not getting it. So
there are people who've always enjoyed to go possum shooting. Does that happen on our...
Oh, yeah, it's amazing. Like
do people go shooting up on the Maunga?
Yeah, yeah, especially just the landowners, the farmers. So I'll have farmers ring me up and say, oh, I went shooting last night and got 80 possums. It's amazing.
I mean, it's great that they're having some success, but that's an indicator of how many there are around the place.
Yeah, but also possums often sit on the edges of the forest, and so if you're just going along farmland and just spotlighting them, you can shoot a lot of possums, and not have as many inside the bush.
So what's missing in this country that they've got in Australia that keeps their population in balance?
Well, there's just so much lush vegetation here, so much food here for possums. Yeah.
And no snakes.
In Australia, they're just eating dry eucalyptus leaves or something.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, I mean, you know, like when you look at the landscape in Australia compared to here, it's just a smorgasbord here for them.
Yeah, yeah, it's very different. Yeah. I've been over there at places where it's super dry.
Yeah.
So you mentioned about the mice and the things at your place. Like, I guess this is the time of year when the mice and rats are coming inside, and everyone's probably tearing their hair out, or potentially tearing their hair out. I heard something gnawing on some wood in the wall the other day at our place. And someone told me yesterday that rats, they have to gnaw on things because their teeth keep growing and they have to wear them down. So even they'll chew on concrete to do it.
Yeah. And they really have really high metabolic rates, and then they have to eat every day. So they're very, you know, like they don't have a lot of body fat.
Yeah.
So
they're always busy.
They're always busy. Yeah. So if they're not eating out of your pantry, they're eating something in your house or out of your car or wires, or they just eat through anything. Like I've had them eating through jibboard and walls and everything. Cupboards. And
so how do we stop them?
We trap them.
Have you got advice, equipment, and help for people with this?
Yeah, we've got lots, and actually, we're doing a bit of a clean out, which is why I'm wearing the gumboots today.
Oh yeah,
because we've been cleaning out some of our stock, and we're going to put out some sales. So if people are keen to get some cheap traps, we're keen to keep, like, rather having them sitting in our cupboards. We thought we'd put them out for sale and make them available to people for less than half price. So keep an eye on our Facebook page and or hit us up before that, and we've got possum traps and rat traps and all sorts that we're really happy to kind of pass on for, you know, for a small cost, but a lot less than what you would get online. So
And advice for where to put that, or how to put the traps, because I know sometimes I see people putting them in tunnels and things like that.
We can help you with all that. So that's part of the Backyard Hub service, is that we advise people where to put the traps, and if that doesn't work, where to try again. There's no magic recipe, but of course, the more you trap, the more experience you get, and the more ideas about what works and what doesn't work. Yeah.
And do you also have a paid service for trapping where people don't have to do anything?
Yeah, so Backyard Plus. So that's when landowners, especially on larger properties or on smaller properties, or if you have a booker batch or something like that, a rental property, and you've got rats or mice, or you just want to keep your place predator free, we can provide that service at a cost.
Yeah.
And happy to talk to anyone that wants to do that.
Okay. And you must end up with a lot of bodies. Like, without getting gruesome, like, what happens with all those?
They deteriorate really quickly. So most of the stuff that we catch just goes back into the bush.
Yeah, if you're up in the bush, yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes we might bag it or put it in the compost or something like that. So
So that's that you can do that. Is Extreme happy to have rats in those compost bags? Do we know?
I don't know.
Help me out. Help me out. Sarah, are you listening? Send us a message.
I think most of it just goes back into nature. That's the best thing to do. It just decomposes so quickly.
Well, that's what would have happened normally.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's move on from that gruesome situation. Tell us about the education program, or remind us about the education program that's going on. Is this after school, in school, or holiday programs? What are we talking about?
Well, we had a bit of a light holiday program. This holiday's just gone, but still had a few days running. We've got our in-school program, Manaaki Ao, so that's going on at Raglan Area School. So we'll be working with year 7 and 8 this coming term, so it's going to be fun.
We've just spent ages talking about trapping. You're not necessarily teaching them about trapping.
We do.
You do?
Yeah, okay. We do. Like, but we give them a variety of kind of environmental as well as team building and leadership type stuff that we do with them. Yeah. Okay. I don't think the program's been finalized, but it's just to give them an experience and get, you know, young people thinking about having a career or opportunities in conservation or science.
And what ages can go to these courses or programs?
Oh, so the in-school ones are arranged with the school staff. So that's we do a junior program later in the year, and then we're doing one with year seven and eights this year.
Okay, intermediate age.
So they get that kind of out of classroom experience.
Yeah.
And then we're doing some stuff with Waitutuna and Te Uku School. So we kind of do these species workshops where students learn about different species that are living in their own backyard. So it might be anything from eels or little blue penguins or oi.
Yeah.
We create a new program every year. And then we have our Karioi Kids and Rangers. So
that's still going through winter?
This week.
Okay, yep. Just started up for the term this week.
Yeah, so we go through term two and usually have a break in term three.
Yeah.
So I think they might be fully booked, but if you still have a young person that wants to join, it wouldn't hurt to just reach out and contact Amber.
Okay.
And there may still be one space left or something in one of the programs, but I suspect it might be all full.
Okay, I'll try your luck, folks. Yeah.
Yeah.
And now we wanted to talk about the predator-free CBD concept as well. What are you guys working on there?
Yeah, so just a bit, we've been having a bit of a brainstorm, and we've always talked about this kind of predator-free whangaroa and wanting, you know, locals and people in their own backyards to trap. But we thought we might do a bit of a targeted pitch towards the CBD.
Yeah.
Obviously, shop owners don't want rats or predators in their backyards.
No, and there's lots of food for sale in town.
Yeah, lots of food.
Yeah, lots to attract. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're still developing the concept, but basically, you know, appealing to businesses to come on board and have traps checked in their own backyards and alleyways and all that kind of thing. Yeah.
Is it possible to entirely get rid of them? Are there places where, well, we know that there's Maunga Tawhiri, they have got rid of all their predators, but how hard is it to get them out of towns?
Yeah, it is hard, but it isn't impossible.
You need some extra sleep, Crystal.
I do. I had a late night last night.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Never mind. You can curl up in the corner later when I do my next interview.
Yeah, but yes, it's a yes-no answer. I think that it is possible to be predator-free. Like, we put people on the moon, right? So in terms of the concept of predator-free.
Can we put all the rats up there?
Yeah, can we put all the rats up there? Yeah. I think we can. I think it is possible. I think technology will provide a solution one day. But in the meantime, I think with trapping and some bait station work and using all the tools in the toolbox, you can get numbers down really, really low.
Yeah.
But it does mean that you have to keep going. You can't stop. And you're constantly managing reinvasion.
Yeah.
So there will be the odd individual that comes back. But the bigger the area that you trap and cover, the more, like, and as it expands, the more the center where there's the, you know, less edges becomes predator free. So that's why we thought we'd focus on the CBD and then expand out. And obviously we've already got like 400 families, over 400 families trapping.
Right.
if they are checking their traps, this is a little reminder, please check your traps.
Especially
if you haven't done it for a while, go out today or this weekend with the kids and check your traps.
So
who knows, Aaron, asking me the magic question, is it possible to be predator free?
I know.
I think it's possible to be predator free.
Yeah.
But it takes a united effort.
Yeah, concerted effort. Yeah.
Cannot do it by yourself.
Yeah. Okay, so can we give people some contact details or simple ways to get in touch with you guys to talk about any of that sort of stuff?
Yeah, so Cardio Project website or Facebook page or Instagram, we're all on all of them.
Okay.
Send us a message. It's really easy.
And if people want to volunteer too to help do the trap lines on the mountain?
Yeah, just really delighted by seeing a few new volunteers pop up. Definitely reach out and say you want to volunteer. If you want to volunteer, please, you know, think about how much you can volunteer and whether you really want to volunteer, because we do get a lot of people also asking to volunteer and then they never reply back.
I know about that too.
Oh, that's a good idea. And then it doesn't follow through. It's really good to have a real good think about, like, do I want to volunteer? Yes, we'd love to have you.
Yeah.
But also think about your time commitment and what you're able to offer.
Yeah.
Because it's good to be realistic
and
about that.
And if you like walking through the bush in potentially bad weather and finding dead animals at the end of it.
Yeah. But we also have opportunities to help out with our education program and fundraising and other things that we do to keep operational.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you for coming in, Crystal.
Thanks, Aaron.
All right, folks, we're going to have a little break, and when I come back, we're going to be talking to Tilly Turner, who is the Tairanga Takiwā Māori Ward Councillor for our area.